10, 8, 3.
Bet made.
Young, fresh-faced Josh looked into the beautiful, beaming face of Jenny, the saloon girl.
Mama warned me about gambling and fast women. She always told me someday I'd marry.
10, 8, 3?
What? Oh, yeah. 10, 8, 3.
Dealing.
He turned over the first card.
10.
God damn.
Yes, I told you. I told you. Oh, stick with me, honey. Oh.
Ooh.
The dealer reached for the card. This was the pivotal card, the one in the play that would actually dictate who won. Either way, once the second card was flipped, the third card was simply a formality. Either it was an 8 or Josh lost.
8!
Luke hadn't realized he was holding his breath. Jenny thrust her body against his, growing more elated by the second. Luke hugged her back. The burly Edgar had gone deathly white and trembled with fury. His hands came up and made great claws that he squeezed into fists so tight his knuckles popped like gunshots. He glared at Josh and Sarah. Then he rose up from the table.
This is all a bunch of crap!
This is all a bunch of crap!
This is all a bunch of crap!
Luke stepped up and began heaping the chips into a pile for the dealer to cash out. They must have bankrupted the bullwhacker because Josh's pot was considerable.
Thanks, Luke. Sarah's going to show me her room.
You came out on top this time, kid. Enjoy it. It doesn't always play out that way.
I couldn't have done it without you.
Josh waved acknowledgement as Sarah dragged him toward the stairs. Jenny snuggled in close, pressing her body into his.
How about you? You willing to spend some of those winnings on an old St. George?
I can think of worse ways to spend my money.
Then come on, dragon.
Oh. Oh.
Jenny was nothing if not enthusiastic.
Woo!
Luke lay on the bed next to her.
You know, you can make a good living breaking horses.
Where is he? Where are you? I'm gonna rip your little fucking head off, boy!
What? Josh!
Luke?
Luke yanked the door open and stepped naked into the hall, Remington ready. Edgar was in the hall, holding a 10-gauge side-by-side shotgun. Luke fired first.
Josh. It's me, kid. Don't shoot. Kid, you okay? Kid!
Josh looked up at him, blinking his way out of the confusion.
I never killed a man before.
He turned his eyes to the hallway behind Luke, where Edgar's corpse bled out.
You get used to it. But I need you to get yourself together. The law will be here in a minute.
That skunk burst in here and tried to kill us. It was self-defense. You have to believe me.
Settle down, kid. That's obvious. You aren't going to be in any trouble. Well, except with Trask, I expect.
To hell with Trask and Goldsmith, too.
Listen, kid, we... Oh.
Luke looked down and remembered that he was naked.
Get dressed. We'll figure out Trask after we deal with the law.
Here, I'll take care of Sarah. You do what Luke says now, kid.
Jenny placed her blanket around Sarah's shoulders as Josh hurriedly began dressing. Seeing things were in hand, Luke went next door and quickly pulled on his own clothes.
What the hell is going on up there? I want to know who came in blasting up my place.
Buckling on the Remingtons, Luke entered the hall again, ready for trouble. Several girls he'd seen downstairs were now in the hallway, standing around in various stages of undress. Their customers were mixed in. He'd never seen such a collection of grubby long-handle underwear in one place.
Dang! Edgar sure enough got bullet holes in him.
Yeah, I think I can see the wall behind him through his guts.
Everyone who was here tonight knows this bullwhacker was gunning for the kid. He tried to murder him in his sleep.
It's true. Ask Sarah. She saw him.
Luke watched the crowd closely. The bystanders seemed to be open to the story. It was no more than the truth, and there was very little to question about why Edgar would have been upstairs with a shotgun. He pulled Josh to the side.
Listen, I might have problems with the law in this town. I don't think it'll be such a good idea if I'm still here when the sheriff gets here.
What? Why?
You'll be fine, kid. Just tell the truth. You got 50 witnesses to how he was hoorahing you earlier and how mad he was about losing. Sarah is important to the bartender's business, so there's no way he's going to want to be swept up in any legal trouble.
All right.
I'm going to find Trask. I'll tell him what happened and send him around to stick up for you. Remember, you didn't do anything but defend yourself, and everyone knows that.
Uh-huh. Go on, Luke. I can handle this.
He put an arm on Sarah's shoulder.
Sarah will help me.
You're damn right, I'll help.
There you are, Sheriff. Took long enough. He's up here.
Luke headed toward the window at the end of the hallway.
I wasn't here.
As he passed by Willie the bartender, he slipped the man a $20 government note. Willie took the money.
No, you weren't.
And Luke got the hell out of there.
Chapter 7, Red Light District, The Soldier's Disease.
Luke needed to find Trask. Luke started toward the tent beyond the sod building that housed the Chinese laundry. If he was lucky, the outlaw would be passed out drunk. Luke pulled his turnip watch from his pocket and flipped it open to check the time. 3 o'clock in the morning. The town was still awake, though less busy. Saloons and gambling halls remained open and crowded. A few drunks and vagrants slept in doorways and alcoves. He crossed the street to avoid two drunk bullwhackers, loudly arguing over some nonsense he had no interest in. The laundry was closed, but he saw a red lantern light glowing down the alley between the laundry and a feed store. Whorehouses frequently used red lights to indicate that they were open. The practice had begun as the railroad moved across the country. By using railroad lanterns, the prostitutes had signaled to the workers that they were open for business. The practice became so widespread, the areas where brothels congregated in a town started being called red light districts. As he entered the alley, someone lay propped against the laundry wall, legs sticking out into the passage. Luke stepped over them and kept walking. The figure was so still he couldn't tell if the person was dead or just drunk. He guessed it didn't matter that much. At the far end of the alley, a scrawny cur with a spotted hide and one mangled ear nosed through a refuse pile.
Go on, get!
Luke strode into a courtyard space between the back of the laundry and the front of a large tent on a wooden frame. Several large lanterns sat on the ground or hung from poles. He hadn't seen a tent this large since the ones used by the surgeons during the war. Two Chinese men sat on overturned whiskey barrels. They were dressed in traditional indigo-dyed linen trousers and loose-fitting shirts that had always reminded Luke of pajamas. The man stared at him, expressionless.
I'm looking for a friend.
You want girl?
No, I'm trying to find my friend. He's a little shorter than me and about twice as wide. He's got a long black beard, wild as hell.
Plenty girl here.
$8.
You want opium?
Opium and morphine were incredibly easy for patent medicine companies to get hold of as ingredients for their tonics. So many veterans returned from the war addicted to morphine, it had become known as the soldier's disease. But Chinese merchants seemed to have a good supply, too, and were the only ones selling it in a form that could be smoked.
No, No opium. No girls.
Laundry clothes.
Pulling out two chips from the saloon, he held them up.
Can I look around?
The two Chinamen looked at each other. After a moment, one held out his hand. Luke placed the chips into his palm, and they disappeared into the man's sash. He smelled burning opium. It wasn't a scent he knew well, but it also wasn't something he forgot. He stopped for a moment just inside the door to let his eyes adjust. The tent was poorly illuminated, and smoke hung thickly in the air. Though it was as gloomy as a cave, his eyes adjusted soon enough, and he began picking his way carefully forward. The floor of the tent was made out of shipping pallets, obviously stolen or purchased from the railroad. To either side of a center aisle, rugs had been thrown over the wooden slats. Sheets strung on lines divided the main area into a series of narrow cribs. Beaded curtains hung in front of some of the little areas. Chinese girls sitting on cots watched him as he walked past them. In one of the cribs, a young Chinese girl no more than 15 years old held a heavy ornate pipe to the lips of an almost comatose man. He inhaled deeply, and his eyelids grew so heavy he looked like he was sleeping. Smoke leaked from his nostrils as if from the chimney of a locomotive engine. He wasn't the man Luke was looking for.
Trask? Trask?
He moved deeper into the tent. Lanterns hanging from the ceiling shed weak, flickering yellow light. Impassive girls sat in their cribs waiting for customers. All of them were young. Some were pretty. They smoked pipes or hand-rolled cigarettes and stared at him with bored expressions.
Hey, you big man.
Luke turned toward the voice, finding a small wisp of a woman. Her right eye was swollen shut, the bruising a deep purple. Her mouth displaying a forced smile.
I'm looking for my friend.
I'll be your friend. $10.
You speak English?
I speak best.
Good. I'm trying to find my friend. I'll pay you a double eagle if you help me.
He held up the big $20 gold coin.
Show you good time.
She patted the space beside her on the cot, covered with rough-spun military blankets.
No, I'm looking for a friend.
Friend? Two girl more.
Never mind.
He started to put the coin away, but she stood up quickly and caught hold of his hand. She knew what he wanted. He opened his hand and held it palm up. She took the coin.
What friend look like?
Big son of a gun. Wide as a barn door. He's got a beard down to his belt.
Yes, I know.
The Chinese girl pointed at her black eye.
Where did he go?
She pointed toward the back of the tent.
He here. He chased dragon.
What does that mean?
He tent. Tent in back. Tent in back.
There's a tent behind this one?
No, girl. Just opium. Those who fixing don't care about girl.
What does that mean?
Fixing. Like a bird.
Oh, flying.
Sure. He tent in back. Must buy opium, get in.
All right. Thank you.
Luke went to the rear of the tent brothel and pushed past the flap. A second tent, about half the size, was set up behind the first. On one side, a series of clotheslines were set up, hung with sheets from beds in the brothel. Another rope was strung between the structures, and three bullseye lanterns like those used by railroad brakemen hung.
Here, watch where you're going.
A white man in a pinstripe vest, sack coat, and derby hat had stumbled into Luke. Sporting an intricately crafted walrus mustache, he reeked of bay rum and opium smoke. The man's eyes were so red, it seemed he'd cry blood instead of tears. The man pulled himself up straight, his face a doughy approximation of indignant. Narrowing his eyes, he regarded Luke like a farmer, discovering a new species of slug infesting his crops.
Do you know how much money I'm worth, you saddle tramp?
Luke looked at him nonplussed. He didn't have time for this, Limey. The man jabbed a finger into Luke's chest.
Did you hear me ask you a question, sir? I run the largest bank in this town. And I...
The banker went down like a pole-axed steer. He slumped on the ground in a loose pile, head lolling bonelessly on his chubby neck. For a moment, his body was so slack, Luke feared he'd killed the man.
Limey bastard.
A huge black man sat on a stool just inside the door, lantern light gleaming on his hairless head.
No girls in here.
I know what's in here. How much?
No less than $5.
Luke handed him a Liberty gold coin. The man studied it, then bit it to test the authenticity. Satisfied, he put the coin in a slot in the top of the strongbox. He handed Luke a brownish lump of opium, then jerked a thumb the size of a dinner knife back over one shoulder.
There are pipes next to the couches.
Luke nodded. He found the tacky feel of the drug in his hand distasteful and stuck it into his shirt pocket. Playing the role of an eager addict, he didn't reply to the bouncer's instructions, but instead headed straight to the back. The opium den was the purest example of equality Luke had ever seen, though he didn't necessarily recognize it as such. Both men and women of every race and creed sat or lay near each other in the throes of opium bliss. The air was so thick with the smoke of the drug that everything seemed sleepy and soft. Forcing himself to concentrate, Luke searched among the rugs and couches and cots for Trask. He found the sergeant major sleeping blissfully on a bearskin throw over an old army cot. A long, hand-carved pipe lay on his stomach, the bowl thick with burned resin. A line of tobacco-brown spittle glistened along his beard where he drooled in his sleep. A young girl sat on the floor, naked under a sheet wrapped around her shoulders. She looked terrified.
Go. I'll handle it.
She didn't hesitate. Springing to her feet, she was up and gone before Luke could blink.
You got a real way with the ladies, Sergeant Major. Hey.
Hey!
Luke kicked him a third time.
Trask, get the hell up.
Trask opened his eyes. They looked unfocused and bloodshot. He blinked several times, as if willing himself to wake up.
Trask, wake up. There's been trouble. I think it's gonna be all right, but the kid is with the sheriff.
Trask ran his tongue across his teeth and tried sitting up. It was like watching a drunk try to get to his feet in a rowboat.
Miller?
Yes, it's me. Did you hear what I said?
Trask made it up on his second attempt. He paused for a moment. His eyes still looked glazed.
Where's the girl? I told that little slut to stay put.
Trask? Trask, damn it, pay attention.
Trask blinked and looked at him, as if really understanding what his eyes were telling him for the first time.
What the hell is it? Why are you bothering me when I'm at my leisure?
The kid killed a bullwhacker and a fat over a whore.
What? You mean Josh?
Yeah, he's with the sheriff now.
What?
It wasn't his fault. The blockhead tried to kill him when he was in bed with a whore. It's a clear case of self-defense, but it's brought him to everyone's attention, including the sheriff's.
You were supposed to have looked out for this kind of crap. God damn.
Rising, he shrugged back into his suspenders and looked around for his hat. Growing more clear-headed and animated by the second, Trask began checking his weapons. Satisfied that they were all right, he put his hat on.
Well, let's go.
That's a problem.
What problem?
I'm not wanted in Hatchet Creek, but I don't want the sheriff to know I'm here. It could cause complications you wouldn't want.
Why?
Now's not the time to get into it. He might recognize me, he might not, but it's better if he doesn't have the chance to. We have to make sure everything goes all right with Josh.
This isn't over. Take me to the kid.
Thank you.
Chapter 8, Hatchet Creek, a full platoon's worth.
The place was empty, lanterns turned low. The sheriff was worried about retaliation by drunk bullwhackers, so he closed the saloon down for the night to prevent any sort of continuation of the conflict from occurring. Luke and Trask arrived just as the bartender was putting the last of the chairs on the tables and was about to retire. They pounded on the door, explained who they were, and demanded to be let in. Willie unlocked the door and opened it, but only after Trask threatened to burn the place down. Josh was in the back of the saloon shooting billiards by himself. He stopped playing as they approached and leaned on his cue.
Sergeant Major.
I don't blame you for killing that damn fool bullwhacker, but I sure as hell didn't need you getting in a fight over some stupid whore to begin with and getting the sheriff wise to who you are.
Don't call her a whore.
What's done is done. I killed my share of idiots in my day, too, so we let it go. Gotta get out of town and back to camp.
I'm not going.
What did you say?
I'm not going. I'm done.
You will damn well follow orders.
The hell I will. I'm done with you and done with Goldsmith. You can all rot in hell for all I care.
Luke came around the table to put himself between Trask and the kid.
Now hold on.
But Trask was quick for his size. Trask drove the toe of his boot into Josh's chin, ramming his head into the wall. Josh's skull bounced hard, and the kid went out like someone snuffing a candle.
What are you doing?
Luke shoved Trask away from the unconscious youngster. Trask clawed at his gun handle. Luke stopped his draw with an iron grip on his wrist. For a moment, the two men struggled against each other. Trask began moving his hand toward the butt of his pistol. He couldn't loosen Luke's grip, but Luke couldn't stop the man from reaching his pistol.
That was your last mistake, Miller.
The punch drove Luke backward. He tasted blood in his mouth. Luke snatched up a billiard ball and flung it at Trask. The hard ceramic ball smashed into Trask's face, bursting his nose. Luke threw himself on the table and rolled across it. Luke fired, but was off balance and out of position. Trask was retreating toward the back door. He saw Luke and fired, but Luke was quicker on the trigger. Luke's round struck Trask in the left shoulder. Trask's army colt hammered out another shot, driving Luke back behind the table. Luke shuffled to the side, gun ready. The back door stood open. Trask was gone. Luke almost barreled through in chase, but instinct stopped him just in time. He stepped through the door, then jerked back inside. Luke went through the door in a rush and immediately cut left. He looked to where he'd seen the muzzle flash and saw nothing. No shot rang out. He fought to keep his breath under control. He turned to one side. He listened.
There.
He came around the corner of the building just as a mounted Trask burst from the space between the mercantile and the next building. Luke dropped to a knee behind a post, lifting the Remington. But Trask turned the animal and leaned low, riding flat out for the edge of town.
Son of a...
But Trask was gone. Lantern light began appearing in windows. Doors flew open, and people spilled into the street. Luke was furious. Holstering his pistol, he turned and began striding up the street. The game was up, and it was time to tell the sheriff the town was in danger.
Seems to me you boys have a lot of explaining to do. And you should start now.
As Luke had worried might turn out to be the case, the sheriff was an acquaintance. He and Red Conwell had crossed trails several times in the past when Luke brought in wanted outlaws to collect the rewards for them.
What the hell are you messed up in, Luke?
He was a stocky man with dark red hair, what was left of it. His hairline had receded well past the middle of his head.
Red, the kid's with me. I owed his daddy, and I'm helping him earn some money to establish himself. Now listen to me. You've got a gang of bad owl hoots out there, and you need to get ready because I believe they're going to hit this town.
How do you know?
Because I managed to infiltrate them.
Josh opened his mouth to say something, and Luke shot him a look. The kid closed his mouth.
What's their game, then?
The man I chased off earlier cased the bank in every safe worth taking in the whole town.
The whole town? What the hell? How many are there?
A full platoon's worth. Most of them are steady gun hands, veterans. They set a fire near settlements to draw most of the menfolk away, then hit the towns. I may have ruined that plan this time, but I believe they'll still hit you. Try to clean out the bank, at least. We need to show them we're ready.
Sheriff!
Damn it, Oxford. I'm doing something important.
This is important. There's a big grass fire just north of town.
What?
It's running with the wind and headed right toward us. If we don't stop it, it's going to get into town quick.
Luke felt as if he'd been punched in the gut, amazed at the speed at which Goldsmith had carried out the plan.
They're coming.
The outlaws had to have been in position already, just waiting for the order to start the blaze.
You gotta get these people ready for a shooting war, now.
Yeah, but that fire is still a real threat. We know it's a distraction, and it doesn't matter, because it'll burn this place to the ground just the same.
He pushed past the frightened deputy and hurried out of the office. Luke followed. As they looked to the north, the horizon was already on fire. The wind came steadily from the north, and already smoke was filling the town.
That's maybe a half mile across, maybe more.
It would hit Hatchet Creek like a furnace.
Fire! We got gunmen coming. Not ahead of the fire, but riding in from the south. I need 8 men. Take up positions at the south end of town. I'll join you once I get men out there to fight that fire.
8 men? Is that enough?
No, but the fire is the more immediate danger. We just need to make these owl hoots realize this town ain't easy pickings. They'll ride off looking for a better target.
I'll help the deputy.
So will I.
You will?
To hell with Trask and Goldsmith.
Luke gave him a nod, glad that Josh had decided to stand with him.
I doubt many men here have as much experience with killing as you do, Jensen. Get to it.
A line of citizens had formed outside some of the mercantiles and general stores. The owners passed out shovels and picks and steel-headed rakes. If they could scratch a fire line out of the prairie before the flames reached the town, there was a chance to stop the fire in its tracks, if the wind didn't pick up.
Go get our rifles, kid. I'm going to the edge of town and picking a good spot. Hurry.
The sheriff knows you and called you Jensen. You're some sort of lawman, aren't you?
Long story. Just get the rifles. Now go.
Goldsmith brought his men in like a cavalry charge. This was a military raid. They were coming in fast, seeking to wipe out the resistance in one violent assault and then loot the corpses.
Here they come!
The West was filled with capable men hardened to violence. But even out here, they weren't the majority. If Goldsmith cowed the town, he could do whatever he liked while people hunkered down behind cover and waited for the outlaws to leave.
This thing could unravel fast.
Stand steady, boys!
As a unit, the charging mass of outlaw riders shifted to the left, going off the wagon road and onto the prairie, cutting off half the guns defending the town.
Get to the other side!
Get to the other side!
Men hastened to obey him, and the deputies already in position on the other side began firing. Behind them, the sky was red, and the glow of the racing fire grew closer. The smoke grew thicker. Luke made it to a corral behind the stage depot. There were 5 horses in the corral and a pair of oxen, all growing increasingly anxious. He saw riders racing fast, pistols in hands, faces hid by bandanas and flour sacks. Night riders, raiders, home burners, and killers. The worst the frontier had to offer. Someone fired from the top window of the saloon.
Sarah's room.
Josh had gone to protect her. He was in love, and that was where his priority lay. A rider's horse screamed and went down as the kid's rifle bullet found it, and the outlaw was thrown. The group of riders around the fallen horse returned fire at the window. Bullets slammed into the wall and shattered the glass. Luke stepped up on the bottom rung of the corral fence and killed 2 of them with a pair of swift shots from the Winchester aimed over the heads of the horses and oxen. The man who'd had his horse shot out from under him staggered to his feet. Luke tried drawing a bead through the milling animals in the corral. Couldn't find one before the man made it away and to the back door of the saloon.
God damn.
Luke jumped from the fence and ran toward the front of the station master's house. Goldsmith's men were in the town now, horses racing up and down the street, men exchanging gunfire. He didn't recognize any of the masked men as Goldsmith, but he saw Trask's unmistakable form kicking in the door to the saloon. Muzzle flashes lit up the cave darkness through the windows, though he could barely hear the shot. He saw the raiders breaking off into well-organized and smoothly executed teams. Most to the bank, several smaller groups hitting each business. A small contingent continued battling the townspeople and deputies firing at them. There was a momentary lull in the swirling chaos of the gunfight, and Luke took the opportunity to run toward the saloon. He bounded onto the boardwalk and put his back against the wall, then took a quick look through the big front window. The man wearing a red bandana over the lower half of his face was definitely Trask, along with the raider whose horse had been shot out from beneath him. Both men were behind the bar and firing up the stairs toward where the prostitutes' rooms were. Willie the bartender lay sprawled over a poker table, eyes open and staring, shotgun on the floor beside him. A flash of gunfire blinked on and off from the staircase. Luke heard the kid's Henry rifle barking as he returned fire.
Josh!
He thrust the barrel of his own rifle through the window and shattered the glass. Both shots missed. Trask came up quick and fired in his direction, forcing Luke to jerk his head back. Rifle up and ready, he threw himself back around the corner and ran down the alley between the saloon and the station master's house. Rounding the corner, he entered the saloon through the same door he had pursued Trask out of, what seemed a lifetime ago. In the time it took him to flank the building, Trask and the second raider made it up the stairs. Luke came around the staircase and saw Jenny lying dead at the top of the stairs. Her eyes were wide open, staring into nothing. A four-shot Derringer dangled from her hand. Blood trickled out of her mouth and ran down the steps. Pounding up the steps, he thumbed both hammers back. He was without fear, filled only with an all-consuming rage. Halfway up the stairs, he gained enough height to see the men standing in the hall. Both of them pumped shot after shot through the door to Sarah's room. Lifting both pistols, Luke fired one, shifted his aim, and fired the other. The rounds caught both Trask and the other outlaw in the back. They twisted as they fell, still firing. Trask's wild shot caught Luke high in the right shoulder. He staggered. He didn't know how Trask was still moving. The man's strength was seemingly inhuman. The burly outlaw swayed, somehow staying on his feet. His gun sagged for a second. Then he managed to lift it again. Luke struggled to stay on his feet, forcing his right arm to function. The Remingtons roared and bucked in Luke's hands. Trask's shot struck in almost the same exact place as the first wound, and Luke's arm went numb. He staggered as his boot came down in a pool of Jenny's blood and went out from underneath him. He hit the stair awkwardly and lost his other pistol as he bounced down the stairs. Each step like a hammer blow to his head and back. Luke hit the bottom of the stairs in a jumble, landing on his wounded side. Trask crawled to the top of the staircase. Luke twisted his neck, looking back up the stairs. The sergeant was grinning as he cocked the Colt Dragoon.
Josh!
See you in hell, Sergeant Major.
Oh. Josh's eyes, filled with terror, found Luke's across the distance, and then he fell forward. His body landed on Trask. The big man swung his arm out, flinging the kid off him. Josh's body thumped down the steps like a rag doll. The time it took for Trask to push the kid away was all the bounty hunter needed to find one of his pistols and scoop it up in his left hand. Luke took aim. Two of the three slugs blew snowball-sized holes in Trask's throat. The third smashed his heavy jaw under the wild beard and angled up into his brain. Trask crumpled at the knees and pitched forward. He hit the stairs and slid down, tangling up with Josh's corpse, arms akimbo, one leg caught between the wooden dowel balusters of the railing.
Kid!
Luke managed to get himself into a sitting position. His good arm trembled, supporting his weight, and he realized he was bleeding badly. No one moved upstairs. He could survive these wounds, but only if he got help. His shirt was soaked with blood now.
They got what they came for, and now they're leaving.
He gasped in pain, then started crawling to the bar. He found a chair and used it to help him stand. The pain radiated down from his shoulder where his arm hung useless. Gritting his teeth, he found his feet and stood, swaying. The kid was dead. Jenny was dead. From the funeral silence upstairs, he was pretty sure Sarah was dead. At least Trask was dead. But Luke Jensen had more killing to do. Staggering to the entrance, he leaned heavily against the doorframe. His breaths came as shallow pants. Several bodies lay sprawled in the streets. Smoke burned his lungs. More blood, hot and slippery, ran down the inside of his shirt.
Maybe I'll just sit down for a minute.
Darkness took him, and he fell to the boardwalk. He woke up in Jenny's room on the second floor of the saloon, because the town had been running out of places to house the wounded. The harried and overworked doctor had patched him up and then left it to the surviving saloon girls to tend his dressings. Trask's bullets hadn't broken any bones. The loss of blood had been the main thing, and Luke had made it through that. He'd been luckier than most. A good number of folks had been killed or badly wounded in the raid by Goldsmith's gang. The street echoed with the sounds of saws and hammers as carpenters knocked together coffins. Soon enough, lack of lumber meant that bodies were buried wrapped in tarps or blankets. Luke fretted for a couple of weeks, afraid the trail was going cold. He'd been wounded often enough to know that riding out too soon was a fool thing to do when facing hard cases. But the delay rankled him deeply. As soon as he could draw and point his pistol with his injured arm, he started making preparations over the doctor's protests. The town had just dug a pit to shove the outlaws' bodies in after a photographer was paid to take pictures, meant to be taken over to the Carlton Chronicle. Josh and Sarah were buried next to one another. Luke was glad to hear that. Luke found the bodies hanging from the tree. A family, burned before they were strung up. The woman and little girl had parts of their bonnets intact, but their dresses had melted away. Their skin streaked red and raw where it wasn't crusted black. Goldsmith had wiped their eyes with grease so that they popped when they burned, and all five of the bodies showed empty, melted sockets. Cutting them down, a shiver of pure hate went through him.
Anybody who could do this isn't even human anymore.
Maybe never had been. The sickly sweet smell of burned flesh hung in the air like a perfume of flowers, making Luke gag until he was forced to put his bandana around his mouth and nose. The family had used a lean-to shelter for their animals, and it was a blackened ruin with the charred corpse of a mule and an ox underneath the collapsed roof. He buried the family. Death was everywhere on the frontier. People died from murderous violence. Minor wounds became infected, and fevers took them away. Accidents occurred with relentless repetition. Women suffered and died in childbirth. Snake bit thrown from ill-broke horses, disease. The list of lethal encounters could fill pages. Medical care was crude, and even that could be hard to find in an emergency. Half a day's ride from a town and someone could find themselves in a primitive, savage, and lawless place that reduced people into two types, the quick and the dead. Such an environment suited Luke Jensen more than he cared to admit. He admired, for example, what his brother Smoke had built, and even envied him the love he shared with his wife. But something was fundamentally different inside him. Luke longed for the loneliness of the open sky and spread-out prairie. He welcomed the solitude of a single campfire on a vast plain. That was a big part of why Luke did what he did. The force of law and order was needed to protect good folk from bad.
Goldsmith.
Bringing Goldsmith to justice was going to be one of the most satisfying moments in his career.
It's gonna happen, Goldsmith.
He stood exhausted over the fresh graves.
Bet on it.
Luke's arm still tired easily and was sore after a day of hard riding, but the scar tissue was strong enough that moving didn't rip it open again. When he wasn't trailing Goldsmith's gang, he forced himself to work on the shoulder, lifting his Remington up and down several dozen times, or even his saddle on occasion to test its strength. He wouldn't want to wrestle with it or spend the day driving railroad spikes, but it was on the mend. It was good enough for gun work. Today, however, the shoveling involved in digging 5 graves in the prairie soil had tested the arm to its limits. It ached when Luke was finished. He couldn't lift his canteen without hot needles of pain jabbing into his flesh. He made camp a short distance from the graves. His fire was small, and he ate a cold meal after rubbing some foul-smelling ointment on the shoulder that the doctor back in Hatchet Creek had given him. The poultice soon worked, and he was able to sleep.
You're dying.
Go to hell!
When Luke found the outlaw, he was under the shade of an oak tree, slowly dying. The gang had taken his horse, but left him whiskey. His eyes were fever bright. The man had a heavy Schofield 44 revolver in his lap, but by the time Luke found him, he was too weak to lift it. Flies buzzed around him in a little cloud. Sometimes he would raise his hand as if to shoo them away, but his gesture did little good.
You burned those folks.
They turned their back on us after the war.
Luke didn't dignify that with a response. The man's lap was full of blood, and the ground around him was muddy with it. The flies crawled around frantically, drinking it up. Luke pulled his canteen off his saddle horn.
Hot. Make a man thirsty.
The dying man tried lifting the Schofield, but the big iron kept dropping out of his hand. Luke lowered the canteen and wiped his mouth with the back of his arm.
You said those people turned their backs. Looks to me like Goldsmith did worse. Your so-called brothers ran off and left you to die. There's no honor among thieves, as Don Quixote says.
I don't know nothing about what no damn Mexican said.
Drool ran down the side of his chin. He attempted to lift the nearly empty whiskey bottle, but that proved too difficult as well.
Cervantes was a Spaniard.
But the outlaw didn't reply. Luke studied him. His eyes were fixed and dilated. The opaque gray of death filmed over them. Luke rode on.